Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, April 11th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The state and federal governments should come up with a plan to manage sea otters. That's the message of a resolution passed by the Sitka Assembly on Tuesday. Sea otter populations have raised concerns in southeast Alaska among commercial fishermen and subsistence gatherers. As populations of the marine mammal has increased, the population of shellfish otters prey upon has decreased. Sitka resident and commercial fisherman Eric Jordan didn't mince words about his feelings on the damage caused by sea otters.
If this was a foreign nation in here doing this to our resources, we'd go to war. We would go to war against that country for devastating our subsistence, commercial, and recreational resources in this fashion. I urge you in the strongest words possible to endorse this resolution.
Assemblymember Michelle Putz suggested some changes to the wording. The Assembly approved her deletion of the word overpopulation in favor of describing sea otters as increasing and unmanaged. Putz argued that whether the population is too big can't be determined until there's a management plan in place. Assemblymember Tor Christensen said removing the word overpopulation is contrary to the whole point of the measure. He described a time he tried to gather sea urchins for subsistence.
And I said, oh yeah, I know there's thousands of them. And I went out, and I couldn't find one. I mean, they were gone. And I mean, and not that, just a few years ago, I'd gone out, and you couldn't touch the bottom.
The Assembly spent about 30 minutes debating on the resolution and making changes to the wording. Although votes were split for various amendments, the entire Assembly eventually supported the final resolution to ask state and federal authorities for a sea otter management plan. Mike Reif recused himself because he participates in dive fisheries. You can read the final version of the Assembly's resolution on our website, kcaw.org. Sea otters aren't just a Sitka issue. In Petersburg, a committee of fishermen and other residents is wrestling with what to do about the impact of a growing population on commercial crab and dive fisheries. The Borough Assembly appointed the ad hoc committee this month after choosing not to endorse proposed legislation that would put a bounty on the animals. The committee's first conversation took place Friday, and as Matt Lichtenstein reports, it was wide-ranging.
When he signed up for the committee, commercial crabber Annie Knight thought the group would be discussing whether or not the borough would support Senator Bert Stedman's bill. That measure would pay hunters a $100 bounty for every sea otter they lawfully kill. Otters are federally protected and may only be hunted by Alaska natives. While he acknowledged the otter issue was complicated, Knight suggested focusing on a simpler question.
Are we going to support our commercial fishing community or not?
No one debated the importance of supporting the town's lifeblood industry, but some of the other committee members didn't think a bounty would accomplish that. The group is chaired by Borough Assembly member and fisherman Kurt Wolhuter.
I've always intended on supporting the commercial fishing industry, but I personally don't think that Stedman's bill is the way to go.
For one thing, Wolhuter was concerned about the legality of a bounty and that it would conflict with the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act. As an alternative, Wolhuter pointed to the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's approach on the issue. The institute teaches Alaska natives how to process and sew otter hides. It's also encouraged the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to change regulations that hunters and artisans say have inhibited them from hunting the animals. Wolhuter suggested voicing support for those efforts in the hopes that it would encourage more hunting.
And I thought if there's anything that we could do at all as a community by jumping on board with them, and just making sure that we keep going in the right direction, or maybe get the commercial fleet behind going, yeah, we think that that's probably the direction we ought to go to. And, you know, I mean, get as many voices as we can behind it.
While Wolhuter and some of the other committee members didn't think a bounty was the solution, they credited Stedman's bill for jumpstarting the conversation. Dave Beebe is a commercial crabber as well as a dive fisherman.
Well, I think the main benefit of Stedman's bill is to get the flywheel in motion here and get the discussion going. But it's pretty clear that it won't survive, you know, the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And the economics aren't there either. I mean, there's just not enough money to deal with the scale of the problem that we're facing. But I definitely appreciate, you know, his initiative to pull this off.
Instead of more otter hunting, fisherman and wildlife artist Joan Kautzer suggested coming up with ways the government could help crabbers and divers transition to different businesses like wildlife viewing or switching to other fisheries.
maybe there'd be a way for a crabber to, like, be able to get good funding to buy another permit of a different fishery that they might be interested in? Or is there a way of doing a buyback for some of these crab permits? I mean, I think we, to really address the problem, we kind of have to think outside the box, other than a few sea otters being offered to help out.
Kautzer pointed out that shellfish populations were also in danger from ocean acidification, which is caused by the buildup of carbon dioxide in the oceans. So even if all the otters were eliminated, she didn't think it would restore fisheries to previous levels. Still, the otter harvest was an important part of the equation for Brenda Louise. Louise works with the Petersburg Indian Association and serves as Grand Sergeant-at-Arms for the Alaska Native Sisterhood. She suggested liberalizing federal rules on the use and export of otter pelts by Alaska Natives.
There is a market for this, and we could, I believe personally, that if the policies, if Native people had an influence on the policies with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and were able to create industry, management of the sea otter population, I believe, would be beneficial to the Native people and to the fishermen as well, and to the environment.
The Russian fur trade nearly wiped out Alaska's otter populations by the early 20th century. The state reintroduced the animals to Southeast in the 1960s, and they have since thrived. However, the otter's growing population and big appetite for commercially harvested shellfish species has put them in direct conflict with fishermen. As the otter population expands, crabbers and divers have been displaced from some traditional fishing grounds because they no longer support enough shellfish to catch. University of Alaska otter researcher Zach Hoyt said right now the region should be most concerned with the Dungeness crab and sea cucumber fisheries. He's been studying the otter's diet and working to quantify their impacts. Hoyt's not a committee member, but they asked for his thoughts on the issue.
Commercial shellfish fisheries only have so much time right now, and they need, I mean, without any sort of major change to something, it's a time issue, and there's so much time left that you can effectively make a living fishing for these things. I think there are management strategies to maximize that and that sort of thing, but I think the writing's, like, what I see, and the way that the population is progressing, expanding both exponentially in both range and in number and density, I don't see that there's much of a chance for a commercial shellfish fisherman 10 or 15 years from now.
Hoyt said there was nothing limiting the otter population in Southeast, no great white sharks and no predation by the region's orcas. In fact, he said they're the healthiest otters that researchers have found. Some members called their impact a disaster and suggested it should be declared as such, which could mean state and federal relief funds. That idea didn't appeal to crabber Andy Knight, who said he didn't want to be compensated for a lost lifestyle. And Knight emphasized that it was not just a problem for commercial fishermen.
This is an issue that really involves all Alaskans. If you live a subsistence lifestyle in Southeast, you are being affected.
Mm-hmm. Putting concerns like these, as well as suggestions for addressing them in writing, is the committee's ultimate task. The members hope to draft a resolution for the borough assembly to consider and eventually send on to federal and state officials. A few years ago, the former Petersburg City Council passed a resolution asking state and federal agencies to work with tribal leaders in Southeast Alaska to become more actively involved in sea otter management and look to remedy problems that already existed. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The city of Sitka and dog owners have reached a compromise. In December, the assembly passed a tough new ordinance that bans dogs from the new $2.6 million artificial turf baseball field at Muller Park. Violators face a fine up to $300. But assembly members last year broke off parts of the ordinance that dealt with other areas of town after dog owners said there were only so many places to exercise their pets. Peter Kennedy was among those who worked on finding a compromise for the other parts of town. He showed up Tuesday night carrying a cardboard cutout photo of his Great Dane, whose name is Mister.
We are good dog owners. We pick up this stuff that Eric was talking about every time. You could come to our home and not know we had dogs, because there is none in our yard. So I just would encourage you to support the next two ordinances, J and K, as written, knowing that a lot of people took a lot of time to make it fair.
The first ordinance keeps dogs off the Muller Park ball field and adds Lower Muller and Kruger multi-use fields, sport fields at Kimshan Recreational Complex, and municipal playgrounds, including Crescent Harbor Park and Muller Park East and West. The fine is still $300 for having a dog inside the fence at the new Muller baseball field. It's now $100 for the other restricted areas. Another ordinance establishes off-leash areas, provided owners are able to control their dog's behavior. Areas include the Cross Trail, Valandry, Kitgu Shaheen, and Kimshan Field 1 when the fields aren't being used for sports or school activities and dog parks. As always, owners are required to clean up after their animals. Right now, the state of Alaska is obliged to provide Medicaid funding for all medically necessary abortions. Tuesday, the Senate passed a bill that would narrow that definition. It's the first time the Senate has voted on an abortion bill since 2006. The legislation would only allow for Medicaid payments if a woman is at serious risk of physical harm if she goes through with her pregnancy or if the woman is a victim of rape or incest. It specifically excludes mental health conditions. Supporters of the legislation have characterized that as a loophole through which women can get Medicaid coverage or elective procedures. Anti-abortion groups have gotten behind the bill, saying it would reduce the number of abortions in the state because low-income women are less likely to go through with the procedure if they can't secure payment. Senator John Coghill, a North Pole Republican, sponsored the bill and says that his intent was narrower than that.
This debate is not about limiting anything. It was really about defining who pays for what. So they hope it limits. I tend to agree with them, but that's not the debate.
Opponents of the bill still say the measure chips away at reproductive rights and that it's unfair to poor women. Democrats in the minority also question its constitutionality and suggest it could open up the state to a number of legal problems. Anchorage Democrat Bill Wilikowski noted that crime victims couldn't use the vagueness of mental health exception to get Medicaid to cover an abortion.
We're statutorily forcing women to disclose rape and incest. And what that does is, we heard about this in Senate Judiciary, it puts physicians in an extremely difficult position, and it puts potentially the state of Alaska in an extremely difficult position.
One amendment that was made to the bill, Senator Berta Gardner, an Anchorage Democrat, offered a change that would expand the state's Medicaid program to offer more family planning and women's health services, with the idea being to reduce the number of unplanned pregnancies. The bill sponsor removed his objection after Liesl McGuire and Anna Fairclough, two moderate Republican women from Anchorage, voiced their support for the change. McGuire described it as pro-life and pro-women compromise.
It is imperative that the members of this body send a message to those with pregnancies about the value of the unborn, but also the value of their life.
The bill passed 14-6, mostly on caucus lines. Sitka Republican Bert Stedman and Juneau Democrat Dennis Egan both broke with a majority to oppose against the bill, while Bethel Democrat Lyman Hoffman voted for it. Companion bill is currently moving through the House with just one committee left to review it. The National Marine Fisheries Service is planning workshops in Juneau and Yakutat on April 22nd and 23rd to take comment on whether cruise ships or other vessels in glacier fjords disturb harbor seals. Harbor seals are an important subsistence game animal for the community of Yakutat. Yakutat seal hunters for more than a decade have said numbers of the animals are declining. NMFS is considering management measures to protect harbor seals from vessel disturbance. Specific measures have not been proposed. The agency says the rapid rise in tour vessel traffic may alter natural behaviors of seals during breeding and molting. Rules could affect visits to Hubbard Glacier, the longest tidewater glacier in North America. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.